This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 14th of October, 2009, and I'm happy to be joined once again by Greg Nicoletos, the proud Neo-Luddite and founder of WeThePeopleWillNotBeChipped.com. Greg, it's a pleasure to have you back on the program today.
Absolute pleasure to be back, James.
Well, Greg, as I say, this is your second time on the program now, but it's been a couple of months since we last talked. So just to bring everyone up to speed, why don't you give a quick rundown of your website and the type of research and activism that you're engaged in?
We are considered Neo-Luddites, which I guess when you look at us from the Department of Homeland Security, we are a group of individuals who don't necessarily embrace the technology that is being put forward by the military-industrial complex, by the big multinational companies that obviously control, you know, information technology, and obviously the overlapping converging trends of biometrics, including the smart grid. So our movement has actually been seen as, let's say, the movement, the first collective movement against what's considered the building of strong AI. So we've been recognized as the really the first collective movement that says to the transhumanist movement, and also to the fast advance of technology, that the how the technology is actually progressing, there needs to be an open debate of where this is all heading. Because just because technology can actually be achieved or implemented doesn't necessarily mean it should. So just because we can do it doesn't necessarily mean we should. So that's really our position. Our position is not to go out and absolutely slam the scientists. It is to basically put forward the opposite spectrum of the actual argument and say, what is an actual risk here from a level of the future for humans? So the one area that we focus on strongly, which is, I guess, the reason that I've chosen, is the human microchipping area, simply because with the converging trends that we're seeing, a lot of the actual truth movements and a lot of the actual alternative news movements as well, I can see us all overlapping at one point, and the point that we will all overlap on, according to myself anyway, I think we'll be actually on the human microchipping agenda.
Excellent. Well, you bring up an important point, because obviously the Neo-Luddite movement, or the We the People Will Not Be Chipped.com website, is devoted towards opening the dialogue with the other side and showing that there is another side to this to the blind advocates of this type of technology. And the only people who could be opposed to an open dialogue are people who have something to hide. And I think if we take a look at the last 50 years of technological progress, at least, we can see a lot of technology that's been implemented simply because a lot of people didn't know it was being developed or was being worked on.
And correct.
Of course, that continues to happen, and that's the way a lot of this technology is sort of weaved into the fabric of our society before people even know what's happening.
Exactly.
So this dialogue that we're having right now is another part of, another brick in that wall of that conversation that we're having to try to expose and show what's going on behind the scenes. So this is extremely important to do, I think. And today I wanted to talk specifically about the smart grid, because this is a term that we're seeing increasingly used these days. And of course, my observant listeners out there will have noticed that this term smart is starting to be applied more and more to all sorts of new technologies and new systems, including, of course, IBM's Smart Planet campaign. But
yes.
I think a lot of people out there are still confused as to what the smart grid is and what smart technologies are. So why don't you break down what kind of technology we're talking about here and how far along it is?
Yeah, what the smart planet is, it's IBM's. The major thrust that IBM has, and that comes from the CEO as well, is as we're moving into what they consider to be, the new millennium, where you have terrorism and you have financial markets that are in flux, what they're saying is for the humans to basically survive the next stage of evolution, there needs to be an overlord, if you like, that will oversee the information flow from organizations all the way down to individuals. And obviously IBM has self-appointed themselves, as they have throughout history. I mean, even going back to the census in 1890. And when the CEO actually addressed the Council of Foreign Relations, that was one of the major thrusts that he basically had. So what it comes down to is what they are working on is a grid that is totally connected. And what I mean by that is for them to actually include radio frequency ID and also the next generation, which is called barcodes, into every single object in the world. And by doing so, what we are then creating is this intermeshed global grid where, I guess what I say is, where every item then becomes a witness to the event. So, for example, if you're in your normal room and everything in the room is connected through sensors and through actual readers, which can actually interpolate the information and then actually stream the data, you are then living in a world where normal day objects can basically be a witness to not only to you, but also to the environment. The reason IBM basically does promote this agenda, though, is because they actually have the technology, the infrastructure, and the software capabilities to actually pull this thing off. The scope is so big. It's one of the most, you know, coming from an IT background, there really is only one company that can basically achieve that, which is, you know, IBM. And how they're proposing to do this, which is going to form the basis of the global grid, is realistically the mobile phone. So as we're moving to now having, it's I think 4 billion subscribers by the end of, I think it was 2009 to 2010, we're looking at 4 billion mobile phone subscribers. That is how the grid is starting to be put into place. So the key aspect to it is to move us to a 3G phone. And then once you've actually moved into 3G, you then have other areas that then get opened up, which includes, you know, the electronic product code, which we can get into later, but it opens up augmented reality. It opens up ambient intelligence. It opens up a multitude of, I guess, benefit angles that they will actually use to bring the grid into place. So it's just like anything. They give you a benefit, people subscribe to the benefit, and then on the other side, there is obviously the fact that we are giving up free civil liberties, we're giving up key information in regards to our purchasing records, and also how we basically conduct ourselves during the day. And then it goes back to that old question, if you've got nothing to hide, what have you got to fear? But obviously, when you look at how IBM has conducted themselves as a company, there's more than enough evidence to actually fear what the smart planet is all about. It's not really about being smart. It's about a totally controlled planet. It's getting to a point, James, where it's just total data mining. That's what it's about.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, in effect, what we're talking about ultimately is we're moving to a world where every single object in the world will become a type of tracking device. And when you talk about that type of world, it's almost like a describing a different space. It's almost like the world becomes an internet, which can be tracked and traced at a central location, which the implications are overwhelming. But as you say, it is going to be introduced as, of course, for its positive benefits and the great things that it can do. And another way it will be introduced is bit by bit, incrementally, just moving closer and closer to personal space. So what are some of the ways in which we're talking at right now, implementation?
Right now, I mean, if you go onto the Apple App Store, A classic example is one app which is moving towards augmented reality. What you actually need is you don't only need the 3G Apple phone, you actually need the 3GS, which actually has a compass built into it as well. And by having the compass, you can then obviously utilize the app, which let's say, for example, you know, you want to know where all the subways are in your local area. You then hold up your phone and utilizing augmented reality technology, it basically overlays information to you on your actual mobile phone. So it can then say to you, look, the subway is just down the road 2 kilometers away. So what it does, it adds data and adds information to your current view of the world. Another example of that, which, you know, and obviously, you know, the yuppies, I don't know what you call them in your country, you know, the guys that see the hip and the cool aspect of it will be major adopters of this. I mean, look, I enjoy a nice glass of wine. I'm not a wine buff, but I'll give you a real world example. Let's say you moved into a wine store who had actually implemented the electronic product code on the actual products. The electronic product code actually has more data on the actual wine than what you would read on the label. So, for example, you might have, you take your mobile phone, you hold your mobile phone up to the actual wine bottle, which then has the EPC code. The EPC code then gets read, and then there is actual data that is relayed back to your mobile phone to be read in real time that says, look, this bottle of wine is best served with, you know, sirloin steak. We recommend it with this particular cheese. It's this sort of vintage and, you know, comes from this harvest. These are the awards it has. So that is the benefit approach. The problem then becomes you then purchase this bottle of wine, which has got an RFID tag or let's say a barcode on it. And from there on, the product then leaves. You walk through the portal and then you are actually assigned that particular product to your purchase records, which then can obviously be harvested and then maintained on a database and then actually cross-correlated, forming a very good picture of the sort of person you have. And then we can start moving that sort of data to actually being sold to other companies, marketing companies, that can say, okay, well, Greg likes this particular bottle of wine. Let's start targeting these particular products to him. So unbeknownst to people, with every, it's just like anything on the internet. When you install a toolbar, the toolbar isn't there to help you. The toolbar is there basically to assess and track your movements on the internet, which is then fed back to a local server. And then from there on, they can basically start seeing what site you went to, what site you didn't go to, and then obviously start building plans to actually monetize your movements. So it's the old story. There is a benefit, but with every benefit, you know, there is someone making money on the other side.
And yes, of course, this goes back to business interests, but it's something I've pointed out many times before, and I'll point it out again here, is that, of course, this is exactly what Admiral Poindexter was talking about as his ideal for the Information Awareness Office when that was launched back in 2002, when he was talking about building these vast relational databases using financial transaction records, which at that time were going to have to be culled from numbers of different databases and correlated with all sorts of information. But what we're talking about is basically a system where that's already electronically done, simply through the system itself and through all these product tags. So we're moving into a system that has been designed specifically for these types of tracking purposes. And that's on the consumer level. But of course, this technology is also being marketed to governments on the sort of infrastructure type level. And we talk about the smart power grid, for example, or we talk about smart traffic grids or even smart global health implementation. Can you talk about some of those larger infrastructure type projects?
Okay, I'll give you an example. Let's say if you looked at DARPA, for example, how DARPA is working with what's called the Global Information Grid. So the information out there is very sketchy. So what it comes down to is when the Star Wars project was actually put into place, which was obviously, you know, the US defending themselves against the Russian nuclear threat and stuff. The Star Wars project is very much alive, but it has moved from being let's say, whether it ever was a military defense project, you know, who's to say, you know, we're not privy to that sort of information. But the Star Wars project and the actual building of, you know, the global information grid is really, it's really about being mapping the reality as we have digitally. So it is about taking your real world experience and moving it into a binary ones and zero sort of a solution with the actual technologies that is currently available. So how this will all work from, you know, DARPA's perspective, it is really about just total domination over the internet. It is about total domination over the electromagnetic spectrum. It is about moving this to a censored environment where we are talking about sensors. And for the listeners out there, they use the word sensors and actuators. All a sensor is a sensor is something that is capable of extracting information from an environment. And the better the sensor, the more information it can actually extract relating to context. So what that means is you might have temperature sensors. You might have sensors that can basically determine speed, or you can have sensors that can basically interpret height. So to bring it into perspective, going back into the real world scenario again, there is an actual project that's been worked on in the UK, for example, where depending on, let's say, the person's recyclables that they have, you can have, let's say, an RFID in a glass bottle and RFID in your normal trash. So if you throw the trash, which has got the RFID, and you don't put it in the right recyclable, you could be actually then issued with a fine, because the one sensor would say to the actual RFID when it's been read, hang on, you've actually put a plastic bottle into the newspaper bin. And that could then obviously generate an actual fine. So that is where, I mean, a sensor then becomes a witness to everything. So every product then becomes a witness to your environment. And then the witness to your environment can actually go out and basically make you a guilty party. So this is the sort of information that realistically DARPA and all the military industrial complex is really trying to get. That it is really about just total containment of the information flows as they actually occur over the whole world. So when you look at it, what they want is, if Greg Nicoletis, let's say, moves from point A to point B, they want that sort of information in real time. They want what's called on time, in real time, all the time. And that is an actual quote that has actually been used by the DARPA people. And how that will move about that is, it goes back to sensors again. So they are currently working on new ways of actually, I guess, how do I explain this? They're utilizing neural networks. So what they're currently working on with IBM, for example, is they are reverse engineering the brain at the end of the day. So just to go off track a bit, the one side which they are basically proposing to us as mankind, where we the people comes in, what they're saying to us is, they're saying, look, for man to evolve as a species, you will need to actually put transistors and resistors, or, you know, not transistors, and processors into your actual mind for you then to evolve into the next evolutionary species, basically. And Stephen Hawking's has said that. So it's not any conspiracy theory. That is the marketing agenda that is actually coming out from the transhumanists and from the pro-technology camps. Now, where the big lie comes in is, on the other hand, what they are basically doing is they have really dumped CPU processing on how it currently works, and they are currently working on the Holy Grail, which is basically the human brain. So what they're really doing is they're taking the human brain and they're trying to create a blueprint of that in silicon. So On one hand, they're telling us one thing, and on the other hand, they're doing something completely different back in the labs. So when you look at it from that perspective, what we currently have in our heads, which is the brain, that is realistically the holy grail for DARPA. They not only want to crack the brain as such and the on how it actually functions to actually achieve strong AI, but the next big jump for them is to actually break the code on how the mind actually works. How do we think? No one knows how to do it. They even the top neuroscientists still don't know what thinking actually is.
Absolutely.
Did I go a bit off track?
yes, but it does of course tie in. And I think I fear that we've kind of jumped into the deep end here, and it's such a mind-bogglingly vast topic, and it goes straight to the heart of some of the key concepts of what makes humans humans and what technology is and how we use it and all of the big questions. And even for someone like myself who spent some time researching it, obviously not as much as you, but I've spent some time looking at this, and it's still hard for me to get a handle on some of these topics. But I guess one way to do that is to take a look at some of the people that are actually making this technology come about and some of the organizations and companies. We've already talked a little bit about DARPA, but can you identify some of the other key players that are sort of bringing this technology about?
Going down the stage, the major players realistically is the MIT labs, right? So MIT is realistically the think tank and the front end for radio frequency ID and also for the barcode. So anything that really comes from that particular area is really coming from MIT. Obviously, you have DARPA funding, and then, you know, when you start looking closer and closer, you've got Intel, you've got the Zigbee Alliance. There's numerous companies. You've got SAP, Hewlett-Packard, Compaq. It's really all those companies that, from a consumer level, we all think they're competing. That, you know, IBM is in competition with Compaq, and Compaq is in competition with Intel. But when you look at it from a chunked up perspective, you realize that realistically all these companies are really working on the same pie, but have got different slices of it, which all come together to form the global pie, if that makes sense. So the one area which is bringing it together for the end user is what's called the Internet of Things. Now, what the Internet of Things is, and that ties into, once again, what I mentioned by augmented reality and ambient intelligence, what the Internet of Things is, it is about creating, in a network, for example, you have basically, you've got nodes, and those nodes all really communicate to a particular system and to a particular protocol. So on the internet, you've got what's called IP. So in my perspective, what I think will happen in the long term will be just like when you go on a broadband connection and you're basically set up on a particular line, you have got a dedicated IP. I believe what will happen one day is we will all be assigned a specific IP that will be the only way you will be able to actually get online, is that you get verified by your IP so that they know the information that is coming from your particular PC specifically linked to you. Now, China, and look, I apologize, James, and I'm going backwards and forwards, but the whole thing just is just like one big octopus, and it's just got so many different arms, and you go from one stage to the other stage, and you know, sometimes you fall off track, but realistically, it is all the same thing. It comes back down to how this Internet of Things will work is to get everyone in the world to be utilizing the 3G phone or the next application after 3G. Once you've gone to 3G, you can then basically utilize the technology that will become available to us, which is, you know, augmented reality, ambient intelligence. And what ambient intelligence is it is an environment that is basically aware of you in context. Meaning, I'll give you an example. Let's say we have a meeting at the office. Somebody turns up 20 minutes late, which is a current scenario that's happening out there, or program it's out there. And the person that comes in late by 20 minutes is automatically issued the minutes of the meeting that he missed in the 20 minutes. So the environment is aware of its surroundings, but the only way it's really aware of its surroundings is simply because there is RFID at play, there are portals at play, and there are sensors at play. But more importantly than that, there is also algorithms at play and software working in the background that is basically matching you to the algorithm to predictive technology as well. So it is really about harvesting as much information as possible. And for ambient intelligence to really take it to the next step, it really has to acquire far more data about yourself. So when it does predict an action, it is an action that you actually really want. So as a real world example, let's say Greg's had a tough day at work. I come home, I'm 1 hour late. I'd like to have a glass of wine. Now, does the wine get poured out to me just because I'm 1 hour late? I could have had a bad day or I could have really had a good day. What is the reason why I'm 1 hour late? So my environment under ambient intelligence still has to react to me, whether it's correct. That's what they're currently working on. So it's not there right now. But based on where technology is going, it'll get to a point where people will want to contribute to the actual software, if you like, to make it more match their needs. But at the same time, all the information that is being given forward to the machine is really information that isn't necessarily safe within the mainframe.
Well, Greg, this sounds like a technological utopia. What could possibly be wrong with this?
And look, and that's what people are going to say. It's you see, where the technology of utopia really falls apart is once you have these particular companies having total insight into your purchasing records. They have total insight into your needs during the day. They have total insight into really what makes you tick. The next question then becomes is, when you look at companies like IBM, who are DNA sequencing, they're working on projects which are called Project Checkmate, where they basically spin different scenarios in regards to, the bird flu and the bird flu mutations. You have IBM building the global brain, if you like, telling us specifically that DARPA actually runs this thing. When you start stitching it all together from a genome perspective to personalized medicine, where they're actually saying, look, we can tailor vaccines specifically to your genome, right? And then they start hiding behind companies like the National Geographic and go out on a harvesting campaign to, various cities and say, oh, where did you come from? Let's track your lineage, right? And you have these people, and I don't want to call them stupid by any means of the word, but they just don't see the big picture. What they see is they see National Geographic approaching them and saying, look, let's find out where you came from. And these people are handing over their DNA, and as a result, IBM then builds this collective database on people's DNA, and then they start telling us, well, what we can do with this information is actually tailor vaccines specifically to your genome. Now, anyone who has actually studied eugenics, everyone knows the DNA realistically is the holy grail. I mean, if you're a eugenicist, what is a better blueprint than your DNA?
Well, that's exactly right. And once you've given that map, I guess, to someone who desperately wants to control that terrain, then the game's over, basically. But
correct.
I guess it's important to identify not only the technology itself and how it's coming about, but also, I guess, the underlying motivation behind implementing this, because I think we've identified already that, of course, there's always business interests, there's always money to be made in something like this, so there's always that monetary interest. But I think if we stop our analysis at that point, we do it a disservice, because there's another level, which of course we've alluded to, which is the idea of tracking and controlling and tracing people. And of course, the this type of technology in the hands of a dictator, I think people do not have to use their imagination very much to see how that could play out. And then I think there's even a third level of this, which is an underlying ideological motivation, which you touched on briefly, I guess called transhumanism. So maybe can you identify what that ideology is and what beliefs those people hold?
The transhumanist agenda is probably the agenda that I see that has, from a logical perspective, if one approached it from that perspective, it has more holes than Swiss cheese in it. But the problem that I foresee is because the end consumer is being approached by things like the Internet of Things and augmented reality and all these things that seem to make their life just that much more convenient and having more access to information, and how we're moving into this world of, realistically, I view it as a world of low self-esteem. I mean, everyone's on Facebook, you know, putting out their pictures of themselves, of what they've done, and everyone wants to be someone. It's just a case whether they want to be loved or I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. But the agenda at play is realistically is we're moving towards a place where there's almost this love for the mainframe. There is this addiction to the internet. And look, I hold my hand up. I'm on email all the time, as you know, James. And that is what is ushering in the movement of transhumanism. Now, what transhumanism is doing, it is a collective group of people that have realistically spun this marketing campaign to, the way I view it, is to dehumanize people to the point where we're saying for us to get to the next step in evolution, that as man has progressed, you know, from, you know, plankton to, you know, a monkey to an ape to a human, right, well, the next logical step is a cyborg. So, I mean, that's flawed thinking in my perspective anyway, but I'm not going to sit and argue with evolution. What I do sit and argue with is how this particular movement will basically manage to pull it off. So what the transhumanists are really about is they're building, and there's different terms of it, is called what's building the singularity. Now, the singularity can be seen as where technology either fuses with man, and man then basically goes on to be a greater person than the old man, becoming half cyborg, basically, or post-human, as they like to call it, or B, which is the strong AI approach, where technology gets to a point where it far surpasses human technology or human capacity and capability. So if one had to break up what transhumanism is, it is realistically a religion of technology. It is to build something simply because we can build it, and risking everything, including the human race, in the pursuit of building what they call Artelex. So there is a gentleman I do respect within the transhumanist field, probably the most, who's called Professor Hugo de Harris. He's one of the gentlemen behind Building Gods, which I'd actually recommend all your listeners to view. And the reason I do respect Hugo de Harris is he actually acknowledges the North and the South Pole of the actual argument. On one hand, he does want to go out and build strong AI and see what happens if we do build the superpower intelligence and where does it lead us. And B, on the other hand, he's saying, look, this is coming from the same camp that gave us the hydrogen bomb, where when they went and detonated the first site at Trinity, they had absolutely no concept of what was actually going to happen. They were taking bets of whether they were going to destroy the ionosphere or actually destroy the world. So when I see the transhumanist movement basically taking that sort of gung-ho approach, willing to risk everything just so they can fulfill and tick their little scientific box and keep with their particular funding that's coming from particular either military industrial interests, elite families, and the like, you know, where they actually get their seed funding, it is probably, the way I view it, that one of the most serious threats that mankind is currently facing.
And it's a threat that we've been facing for a while now, as the rate of scientific achievement and advance just continues to accelerate. And it's something that's often been said, that if we can do it, it will be done. And it's that sort of a defeatist attitude. And people get that, obviously, from thinking about things like the development of the H-bomb, which, of course, was a turning point in human civilization. But it could be done, and it was done. And I guess the question then becomes, how do we put the brakes on this? How do we resist this? How do we put up any sort of meaningful resistance to what I guess some people would just say technological progress in a positive way, and say that anyone who's opposed to it must be wrong. So how do we oppose that?
Okay. Look, what it comes down to is we've just actually released, today was the release for One Mainframe to Rule Them All, and which is a movie that we've been working on for quite some time. And we're hoping this will open up the debate with the transhumanists. But at the same time, the question you ask realistically is probably one of the toughest questions you can ask, James, because even myself, I see what is happening and the agendas that are at play. And look, On a level here in Australia, we have basically, let's say, got the first stages to getting a sponsor to a bill to put preventative microchipping legislation into place. So I still believe people need to work with people in government, petition them. At the end of the day, you know, even though government is inherently corrupt on just how lobbying actually works, it's the same in every country. I still believe the human microchipping agenda is really one that drives it home, because even people within power or within government also have children, and they also have grandchildren. So if we can focus on that particular point, I think there can be some progress made, because if legislation is put into place, it is a lot harder to actually overturn legislation than if it isn't there. But then on the other hand, how do you actually stop these scientists from developing and continuing to build, you know, moving along the lines to actually build super intelligent machines? And then you've got people like Professor Warwick, who, you know, iCyborg, for example, who I really have absolutely no time for, simply on how he conducts himself out in the marketplace. These are the sort of people that have been documented to actually lie, twist the story to basically fulfill the agendas. So when I have had debates with them, the debate quite often comes from attacking, let's say, us, or they say, oh, look, you're coming from a moral and ethical construct, and that is just a construct that you have created in your mind. So how does one argue on a moral and ethic basis when quite often these people are totally devoid of that? And that is the problem we're fighting. We're fighting a battle which realistically is not on an even playing chess field at all. It's they aren't arguing from the same premise that we are, because simply they do not have the same empathy that you might have for your fellow man and that I might have. We need to understand that these people are willing to risk humanity to fulfill the religion of transhumanism. And that is, I think, if I can drive one thing home to your listeners, is that is what we need to call it. It is a religion of transhumanism. It is a religion of worshipping artificial intelligence. It is no different to any other religion out there. And they attack, you know, people that have, let's say, a faith-based perspective. Their faith is basically in silicon. That is their religion. And I think if we focus on that, it brings this whole intellectual argument that they put forward to us, when at the end of the day, when they say, you know, who should be the dominant species, you know, the robot or humans, I'll tell you exactly who it should be. It should be the humans. It's there is no debate in that. The way I see it is, when mankind manages to sort out the problems that we have currently on Earth, and you have companies that stop warmongering for profit, and we have people within high levels of government stop being corrupt and taking the pie from everyone else, well, that's when we can then go on and basically develop as a country, and then we can consider building AI. But until then, not on my watch, basically.
So basically, yeah, I see. So when you're arguing with these people, it's like arguing with a machine.
You are arguing with the machine, because what they do, you see, and this is the thing, they've actually formed the Institute of Ethics, right? The moral and the ethic way of approaching technology. Yet quite often when you read their writings, whenever they speak to someone who, and what they do is, like, let's say, for example, you know, they're debating with a Buddhist, right? They'll say, oh, look, a Buddhist has got a moral and ethic construct that is, you know, just like in The Matrix, for example, the movie, or it is just a construct of your mind. You need to free yourself from that particular construct. And what we need to do is we need to explore the various elements of the human being. So you have actually got some transhumanists out there that are basically stating, well, just because I was born male doesn't mean I don't have full right and full capacity to experience life as a female. And then B, once I'm done with that, I can then go experience life as a transgender person. Now, like, I mean, when I hear things like that, I'm thinking to myself, like, where do you even start, James? Where do you even start when you think, are these the people that will be holding the torch for the next generation?
Not just holding the torch, but actually, the representatives of a new type of humanity? I don't know. This is...
Exactly. It is a case of... and look, how it is all being done, it has been done with such sleight of hand, and it has been done so, like, sometimes I'll look at their marketing and how they approach market. And look, as mentioned before, I've worked for Apple and I've worked for Xerox, and I've worked with companies where you go, look, you know, Apple knows how to bring products to market. They're very smart. I mean, look at the iPod, you know, look at the iMac. It's they sexualize the product to make you want it. And that is what will happen, or that is what is currently happening with the transhumanist movement. They are sexualizing the movement to make it have that it factor. And what we need to realize is they aren't stupid. They are a highly intelligent group of individuals that are working towards a common goal. And it is, I find it quite annoying sometimes when, for example, with our movement, even though we do get traction, obviously, with a lot of people, the drop-off rate is just absolutely stupendous. I mean, we have people that are hot 1 week and then they will just drop off the next week, you know? Whereas the transhumanist movement is really a movement that is very collective. It is very organized. And obviously, you know, they still have their internal conflicts and things like that. But the movement itself has got so many tentacles to it, including Hollywood, including, you know, elite families that are obviously providing seed funding from the other side. But it encompasses all companies. I mean, we're talking IBM, we're talking SAP, we're talking Intel, we're talking DARPA, we're talking... It's just an assault. It is just an assault on humanity right now.
So what we need to do is sex up the message that humanity itself is worth fighting for and something inherently valuable and something worth preserving.
Exactly.
And I think an important point of that is you've just released an excellent new documentary, One Mainframe to Rule Them All. So tell people a little bit about that.
Yep. Just quickly before I get to One Mainframe to Rule Them All, what we need to realize is where IBM and DARPA is basically spending their money right now is to develop neural networks. So what they're doing is they're developing artificial neural networks. And what an artificial neural network is basically a photocopy of the human brain. So they have basically walked away, not walked away totally, but I mean, they've walked away from the ones and zeros approach, which is transistors and microprocessors, And they know the only way that they will actually achieve artificial intelligence is to basically go on something that they know can create it, which is the human brain. So on one hand, they are basically doing that, but then to us, they are then trying to sell us the old technology that they've developed, you know, in their labs, which is basically the microprocessor. So on one hand, they're telling us one thing, and on the other hand, they're basically developing something that they can hope that they can come close to the human brain. So I think if that particular message is echoed out, that what you currently have in your head is what they consider to be the Holy Grail. So why would you possibly want to stick a brain chip in your head? It's just ludicrous. It would be like stepping down from a Ferrari down to, pogo stick.
Good point. All right, well, tell us about the documentary.
Okay. What the documentary does, it is really an all-encompassing documentary that covers the human microchipping agenda. So what we do is we have taken it from the Nazi times, where IBM basically formed an alliance with Nazi Germany, and as a result of that, allowed the Nazi regime to basically process and catalog the populace to the point where the extermination of the non-compliant races was basically executed at a faster rate. So we step through the evolution of the very chip, showing people how it has gone from just being a normal radio frequency ID device to now being a device that has actually got glucose sensing capacities soon to be released. It has got a swine flu pathogen sensor, which is just down the track as well. And what it really is, it is a call to a collective for people just to put their foot in the sand and say, look, this is a collective war we're fighting. Let's put our differences aside and let's just recognize that there is a company out there that has got a world patent on the human microchip. And it would be silly to think, like, I mean, if you look at it from a perspective of if everyone had, you know, everyone's got a toaster in their house, this company has actually got a patent to a product that can go into 6 billion people around this world. And if you don't think that they're meeting on a weekly basis, developing new marketing and new techniques of actually approaching market, would be deluded to think that. The fact is that they are coming after us. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but they are. You are their target market. The listener out there, you're the target market. I'm their target market. James is their target market. And the documentary itself is so well documented, it is so well researched that if one views it, it's irrefutable. It is absolutely irrefutable.
It certainly is. I can attest to that. I want to thank you for letting me see an advanced copy of that film, and I have seen it and I have watched it, and it is an incredibly powerful and extremely well-documented documentary. There's some incredible interview footage with Edwin Black, obviously the author of IBM and the Holocaust, and also it goes very much in the second part into a lot of the documentation, such that you'll probably have to watch it two or three times to really pick up on some of the documents and things and the way that it ties together. But it does paint a very powerful picture that there is something definitely wrong with this picture, and that there's something that people need to be looking into. So I would suggest this as an excellent way of getting people interested in the subject. So once again, people should go to wethepeoplewillnotbechip.com and look for One Mainframe to Rule Them All. And I understand this is only the first part of a multi-part documentary.
Yes, it is. The second part will basically be the part that actually focuses on the sensor technology, the Internet of Things, and everything like that. So for example, if we went out now and released part two and part three, the information and the like is still coming out there. I mean, just this week, to give people an example, there was an example of, for example, ambient intelligence and your environment operating in context. So they actually showcased a park bench, for example, that had sensors built into it that if you loitered on this particular park bench for too long, the park bench recognised that you'd been sitting too long on the park bench and then decided to actually eject you. So as more and more of these sort of examples come to play, we will then have enough information to say, look, this is real world examples that are coming out there. And then obviously part two can then – so we've got the overall of where we want to go, but there still needs to be hard evidence where the last thing we want to be seen as, you know, is conspiracy theorists.
Right. So it's a work in progress, and obviously it's taking shape as the world itself is taking shape.
Exactly.
Well, it's a very, very exciting thing. I think it's something very important for the movement to put out there as a message, as you say, as a to counteract that transhumanist message. And yep. I think it does an incredible job of that. So my hat's off to you for
thanks,
being
James.
Part of that incredible documentary. All right, well, this is obviously just such a mind-bogglingly vast topic that we could talk about it for hundreds of hours, and of course I'd love to have you back on in the program in the future to talk at greater length, but if you had a few minutes to sort of finalize or wrap up or summarize some of your thoughts from today's conversation, what would you like to say to the audience?
Probably I'd like to discuss where this is all going. So the end solution of what the global information grid really is, it is about having what they determine to be what's called an anytime connection. So at any time, people are on the internet, and once you're on the internet, you then basically moves towards being an anything connection with an any place connection. So the point behind the whole global information grid is to have every single device communicating, so where nothing falls out of the grid. So if one can see the aspirations, and although it sounds absolutely ridiculous, DARPA has gone on to stay on record that they would actually like to RFID, or at least what technology will, how will it'll actually be accomplished, but every dust particle in the world needs to basically be identified, monitored, and tracked. So that's the aspirations. And look, I have got no idea how they will pull it off. But I mean, you could state that nanotechnology will allow like a radio frequency ID particle that will be self-organizing, and it'll self-organize itself to dust. So that's where what we have to look forward to.
Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. Just mind-boggling. And
it is more than science fiction. And then the question goes back, sorry to go on, James, but the question that we often get asked is what is the solution? And for me, the solution isn't so much is the grid going to be built or isn't it going to be built. For me and my movement and my belief system is they can basically harvest your biometrics. They can steal your iris scan. They can utilize functional MRI, which is moving forward. And for your listeners out there, what functional MRI is basically brain scanning. So they're saying that they're just mapping the mind. They're mapping your thoughts, but they're not actually reading your mind. But the long-term goal of that is to have covert fMRI, where you are basically scanned at a distance and moving towards predictive analysis where they can actually read intention. So DARPA has already gone on record to say that even if they have a 90% success rate on predicting an individual's intentions, well, they don't mind having 10% that are actually innocent being put away for guilty. But the fact is these people haven't even committed a crime. This is all based on algorithms that they have developed based on intention. So for me, where it all comes down to is they can steal your biometrics. They can basically, as you enter countries, force you to give your iris scan and the like. And obviously, people have to draw a line. But the one thing that has to be surrendered to the mainframe, and the one area I like to focus on, is if one looks at the science of semantics, if you look at the word online, what online actually means is to be under the direct control of a computer or a mainframe. So that is what the goal is. The goal is to create you to be an internet node and for you to be under control under the internet or the mainframe. So the only way that can be accomplished is for you to hand your free will into the machine. that is where the fight is.
Absolutely, and I guess that's where we cross the ultimate technological barrier, and the ideal of transhumanism is achieved and people merge with the machines. At this point, I should mention to my listeners that there is an article now up on the article section of CorbettReport.com, Verichip Brain Scanning and the Religion of Transhumanism, which you
Thanks
wrote.
Thanks for editing it, by the way, James.
No problem. It's an excellent article, and I do recommend people go to get a little bit more into things like functional MRI and some of the other issues that we've touched upon. But as I say, there's so much more information to cover and so many other ways to take this material. So for people who are interested, tell them once again how they can find out more about you and your the movement that you're spearheading at We the People Will Not Be Chipped.
Yeah, visit the website. It's wethepeoplenotbechipped.com. We actually have there's at least 18 news feeds per day. There is also a face group as well. And the other thing that I recommend to people is it's just like anything. This is a collective war that we are fighting. We're one movement. It doesn't mean that people can't go on and do it. I mean, whether you're passing the information on to another one, as James will testify, there is no money in the truth at the end of the day, right? So the reason why people are doing this is because there is a level of care that we have to the populace and to fellow men, to just alert them to what is currently happening. And I can only do so much. Our movement can only do so much. But what people will start seeing is all these conspiracy theorists that were yelling at the top of their lungs 10, 20 years ago, that the evidence is more than overwhelming. It is resounding and it is irrefutable. It is there. All you need to do is research it. And organizations like James and like ours, they make it there available for you. Just read.
Absolutely, and exactly. And everyone needs to get involved in this personally in some way. If you have any feeling for humanity or your fellow human beings, then you have to take up the mantle and get involved, whether that's simply just passing on this information or getting involved in an active political sense or whatever that may be. So my hat's off to everyone who is getting in the ring, such as, of course, Greg Nicoletas. And it's been great having you on again. And as I say, I'd love to have you on again in the future to talk at more length about this fascinating subject.
Actually, I'd like to talk about next time we'll do the IBM brain and Oh, it's just ridiculous. But anyway,
let's do it. I'll have to prepare myself mentally to get into it. But
it's like, but you know, that's the funny thing. I mean, you know, everyone, even on my side, like, you know, we research it, but every day there is just a new piece of the page that gets unveiled, and you just go, wow, the rabbit hole is deep indeed.
It certainly is. Well, on that note, let's leave it there. Greg, once again for all your work, and thank you for joining me again today.
Much appreciated. Don't be a part of the Internet of Things. Thanks, James.